607 on the Central Coast on this Monday, August 7th, 2017. I'm Dave Congleton. Thanks for tuning in. As we mentioned earlier, the big news of the day is that Katie Lichtig, city manager for San Luis Obispo, has announced her resignation. She's going off to Santa Monica at the end of the month. We'll find some time this week to talk about that. Thanks again to Zoe Rosenberg for coming in today. And I'm sorry, a lot of people were trying to get in there at the end. Remember, don't wait till the last minute to call into a talk show. Zoe's mom was here and she was kind of chomping at the bit, but she held back. So I invited mom and daughter to come back at a future date and we'll continue the conversation. It is a Dave Congleton show, where this hour, always good to have conservative blogger on this broadcast, Matt Hoy, is back with us. Matt, good evening.
Good evening, Dave.
You're a longtime vegetarian, aren't you? You're a big vegan guy, aren't you?
Well, actually, before I came in, not knowing who your guest was, I stopped at Old Slow Barbecue and had a tri-tip sandwich. It was delicious. I'm sure the tri-tip was originally a vegetarian. So does that make me a vegetarian through the commutative property or whatnot?
You want to talk about cap and trade?
Yeah, before I get in, because they're probably still listening to the show on the way home, and I've just insulted them. Yes.
Yeah, everybody's entitled. That's the beauty of this country. Everybody's entitled to an opinion, and if I could toot my own horn, what I like is that people can come in here, whether it's about cap and trade or animal rights, and they can talk.
Yeah.
All I demand is what, in response to Peggy when she called in, people's opinions are valid.
Right, right.
And you can disagree, but whatever. Anyway, why are we talking about cap and trade?
Well, they just passed a law extending it to 2030, and it's going to cost every one of our listeners some money, quite a bit of money, and it's not going to do one whit of good.
Now, as you know, our own Jordan Cunningham, bona fide conservative, he's a bona fide conservative in your mind because you're a conservative blogger.
I'm a conservative. No one is right on every issue,
right.
Republican or Democrat. The only person who's right on every issue is the person I wake up and see in the mirror each morning.
So Jordan was here the other week talking about his vote. Obviously, I'm going to guess you have some concerns about he voted the way he did.
Well, you know, I understand politicians, you know, make certain decisions based on the number one priority of all politicians, which is getting reelected and moving on to the next job, whatever it is. You know, he's going to be term limited. I think he's got two more terms, so he's got two more races to run. And I'm sure he wants to be reelected. And so this is something he can point to as kind of a moderate position that he took here in what is basically a purple district.
But he also thought that he could help kill off the bullet train. He also thought that the new system of regulating things under this bill would be more effective.
Both those may be true, and I am all in favor of killing the bullet train. That bullet train is a farce. It's never going to happen. It is never going to happen as it was advertised, which is without heavy taxpayer subsidies for each and every ticket, for each and every trip. That's if it ever gets built. And I'm not sure without someone in Washington, D.C. who's willing to toss out a lot of money for a pie-in-the-sky bullet train in, you know, California, if you can't get that federal help, I'm not sure it's going to ever happen.
And Matt, as we continue, you should give our listeners, in case they haven't been following the issue, a basic thumbnail sketch. What exactly do we mean by cap and trade? How does it work?
Well, what cap and trade is it's a kind of government-created faux marketplace which gives certain industries in California, for want of a better analogy, it's kind of like indulgences that the Catholic Church used to give. So you are allowed to emit so many tons of carbon dioxide. And if you want to expand your business, if you want to, if you find yourself needing to burn more, then you need to buy them from the state in a kind of a faux marketplace. So your normal, you know, and mainly this involves utilities, it involves transportation, it involves energy producers. are in this marketplace. And so it's a way of kind of sort of raising money in something that looks like a marketplace but isn't really.
So why is it a bad idea?
Well, it's a bad idea because it ends up raising costs to consumers. Legislative analysis of this, they just passed an increase in the gas tax, separate from this cap and trade thing. So our gas prices are going up. The price to run your cars is going to register your car each year is going up. Legislative analysis of this cap and trade bill estimated that by 2021, just because of cap and trade, your price for a gallon of gas is going to go up another 15 cents. By 2026, it's going to be up 19 cents, and by 2031, it'll be up 24 more cents a gallon.
But in return, we get cleaner air. Isn't it a good trade-off?
Well, carbon dioxide isn't a pollutant. Carbon dioxide's plant food. So, I see this a lot. We're cutting down on pollution. No, you're cutting down on carbon dioxide, which is plant food. It causes plants to grow. It causes, you get more yield from plants in the Central Valley, from fruit trees, from all that, all that sort of the stuff that your last guest loved, the vegan, you get more plant food. And carbon dioxide is not a pollutant.
But aren't we limiting pollutants under cap and trade? Aren't we limiting emissions?
We're limiting carbon dioxide emissions. Cap and trade doesn't apply to any other type of emission. It's all carbon dioxide. So what are listeners getting for the extra money for each gallon of gas? And that's a gallon of gas. This affects your electric bills, too. Everyone, a couple of times a year, you'll see you've got a lower than normal electric bill because you've gotten a rebate. Well, that rebate comes through cap and trade, these cap and trade bills, and it comes through because cap and trade is artificially raising your electricity costs. And so some of that money comes back to you in a form of rebate. It doesn't cover, the entire cost that the cap and trade is given to you, but it's kind of a feel-good type of return to you as a consumer. So your electricity costs go up under cap and trade. Your gasoline costs go up under cap and trade. If your gasoline costs go up under cap and trade, that means the gasoline costs of, people driving semi-trucks goes up. So the cost of your food goes up. All of this, probably doesn't hurt someone in Silicon Valley, Mark Zuckerberg, he's not hurt by any of this. It's the poor in this state who are most impacted. This is kind of a regressive tax.
All right. Well, here's one analysis. The government sets the cap across a given industry or ideally the whole economy. It also decides the penalties for violation. Carbon dioxide and related pollutants that drive global warming are main topics of such caps. Other pollutants that contribute to smog can also be capped. In carbon dioxide's case, the heat-trapping greenhouse gases mixes into the upper atmosphere and has a global effect. Reducing emissions locally lowers levels around the world. Hence the argument about climate change.
Well, if you look at their own numbers, and Bjorn Lomborg, who is not a global warming denier, he believes that, and he stated before that he believes that global warming is real and that humans are the main driver of it. But he's an economist, so he runs the numbers.
Right.
So using in an article in the LA Times, and if people want to type in his name, Bjorn Lomborg, Lomborg, he uses the UN Climate Panel's own model, their standard model. And if California meets these cuts that cap and trade is supposed to lower California's greenhouse gas emissions, if California meets those cuts, not just till 2030, which is this new law runs till 2030, they'll have to renew it again if they want to continue. But if they run that new law all the way to 2100, you want to take a wild guess on the number of degrees that's going to lower the temperature.
Oh, it's only like 1 degree or something.
It's
small.
0.008 degrees.
Okay, but what is that?
Thousandths of a degree.
But if we don't do anything, Matt, how much higher is it going to go up?
If we do this, it instead of, you know, under their models, which, right. You know, we can argue, I'd argue their models aren't very good, but under their models, instead of hitting that 2 degrees Celsius in 2100, in January 2100, we'll hit that 2 degrees Celsius in April 2100.
Just to throw this out, I mentioned this to you when it came in. The New York mm-hmm. Times is reporting breaking news. The Times has reviewed an alarming draft report by government scientists who say climate change is happening now and severely affecting the United States. The report directly contradicts claims about global warming made by the Trump administration, which must sign off on it before it can be released.
Yeah. There, you've got a bunch of government scientists who are worried about protecting their own funding, is what I see.
Really?
Yeah.
That's your argument?
I'll make that argument every day because we've had a, you know, if you look at all the climate models, we've had basically a 13 or 14 year hiatus in warmer temperatures. It's been straight lined. And none of the climate models guessed at that. None of them predicted that. And we got to the point where last year you had certain scientists going back and rejiggering their numbers to lower past temperatures and raise current temperatures in order to kind of get that warming to continue. So, they're predicting a lot of this.
On the basis of that argument, you would not accept any report by a government scientist because, in your mind, Matt, they have this agenda that they got to cover their you-know-whats.
Based on what I have seen the past decade watching this, with the so-called ClimateGate emails, where you get these scientists who are colluding together to keep other scientists who come up with different views out of the peer-reviewed literature and that sort of stuff, I don't trust them anymore.
Matt Hoy is on this broadcast talking a little bit about cap and trade, a little bit about climate change. And I'll bring up the Al Gore movie. I saw it yesterday. We'll also take your phone calls when we come back. I'd stick around. We're live. We're local. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show on AM 920, FM 96.5, News Talk, KVEC. Glad to have you with us at Hometown Radio. I'm Dave Congleton. My guest for the hour is conservative blogger. That's the name we'll give him, Matt Hoy. Matt, how do people find your blog?
It's at hoystory.com, hoystory.com.
So I went to the Al Gore movie yesterday at the Palm.
I'm sorry.
I didn't see you. You weren't there. You weren't there.
Al Gore doesn't need my money.
Let me give you an example, though, of the movie. It's the Inconvenient Sequel, a follow-up to the original documentary he did.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about Syria. And we're just having a friendly conversation
right.
here. Friendly conversation. But all my conservative friends are upset because all these Syrian refugees are coming over into Germany and Europe and they want to come to the U.S. And I'm sure you know where I'm going. In the movie yesterday, they talked about one of the major reasons why the Syrians are fleeing their country is...
Poison gas attacks.
They can't farm because of the drought. Rising temperatures have killed off agriculture in Syria, and these folks, in conjunction with all the other stuff taking place, poison chemicals, war, they're fleeing because they can't make a living because they can't do the agriculture.
Because the government is spending money on military equipment rather than irrigation or drilling wells or that sort of thing. You know, you get a similar argument from the, zero population growth people who complain about, we've got too many people on the earth. Curiously, none of them ever kind of put their money where their mouth is and commit suicide. But you get this whole idea that people can adapt. If there's a person starving in the world today, it's not because we can't grow enough food. We can. it's because of war. It's because of, you know, governments doing things like Kim Jong-un in North Korea does.
Well, how about, all right, how about this one? This is MIT. This is just out last week. In South Asia, a region of deep poverty where one-fifth of the world's people live, new MIT research suggests that by the end of the century, Matt, climate change could lead to summer heat waves with levels of heat and humidity that exceed what humans can survive without protection.
Well, then I think,
or you could go to the flooding in Louisiana.
I think we should work to make those people wealthy enough so that they can adapt. And I think that's, if you want to spend a whole lot of money, raising people out of poverty, giving them the tools they need to adapt to climate change, rather than trying to reduce carbon dioxide emissions costing millions of dollars or billions of dollars or trillions of dollars to lower the temperature a fraction of a degree.
But you'd be spending millions and trillions of dollars to raise the income level of everybody. I mean, the money's going to be spent one way or the other.
Well, I think you're right. If you're going to spend the money one way or the other, I'd rather those people get more food. I'd rather they get more shelter. I'd rather they get more education than us work to lower carbon dioxide emissions and lower the temperature a fraction of a degree.
And as a conservative, I'm just curious, Matt, what is the objection to fighting carbon dioxide? And what is the argument against fighting climate change?
Well, first off, carbon dioxide is plant food. Second off, I'm worried about outcomes here. Okay? If the best, most economical solution was to, if we could spend $50 and lower carbon dioxide emissions that in turn actually lowered the temperature 2 degrees, assuming that's what we want, you know, that's our goal. If we could do that for $50, I'd say spend the $50. But we're talking about spending trillions of dollars, lowering it a fraction of a degree. And here are these people who are possibly going to be affected by it, who are in poverty. And this is another thing that, you know, the economist Bjorn Lomborg that I mentioned earlier has talked about, is if you are going to improve the lot of humans on this planet, you are better off doing things like providing clean water, sanitation, food, shelter, energy that's not them burning cow dung and that sort of stuff, which puts a lot of pollutants into the air.
Matt Hoy on this broadcast. His blog is
hoystory.com.
We're talking cap and trade. We're talking about climate change. We'll hear from you when we come back. Stick around. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show. All right, Craig, thank you. We're back with our friend and conservative blogger, Matt Hoy. His website is
hoystory.com.
Talk a little bit about cap and trade in California, a little bit about climate change around the planet. If you want in the conversation, pick up the phone, give us a call, 543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. So you're not a climate change denier. You accept that there's climate change. You just don't know the cause.
I would be labeled a climate change denier. I am not. I believe climate changes. I believe it always has changed. I believe it will continue to change no matter what humans do. I believe humans contribute to it. I don't think humans contribute to it very much.
Ken's in Atascadero on KVEC. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Ken.
Yeah,
hi,
you know, if we didn't have global warming, we'd still be in the ice age, right?
Well, there's always... There's a plus. I mean, one of the things that no one seems to talk about is this assumption that warming is bad, that right now is the perfect temperature all around the world. Everything right now is perfect. And it was warmer during the medieval warm period. It was warmer during what was called the Roman climate optimum. And those were periods of time when you had, you know, great increases in quality of life, in longevity, strides forward in technology and everything else.
But we're talking about devastating droughts, intense heat waves, the flooding in Louisiana.
And you know what? Those are going to happen anyways. I don't, you know, one of the things we were warned, and if you go back to Al Gore's movie, is, you know, there's going to be more hurricanes and it's going to be worse. And yet from 2005 to 2016, we had 11 years where not a single Category 3 or greater hurricane struck the U.S. mainland.
Ken, what else do you want to say?
Well, I had an interesting story. Back in, I think it was around 1300, we had the mini ice age. And these glaciers were descending on a lot of the towns up in the mountains and the Alps and stuff in Europe.
Right.
So the people got so worried because they thought these glaciers were going to envelop their towns that they sent a group of priests up to go do exorcisms on the glaciers because they thought they were possessed by the devil. And they thought that perhaps if they said these prayers and burned incense that they would, you know, stop the weather from getting colder and stop the glaciers from descending on them. It occurred to me that our whole cap and trade thing is probably just about as foolish, the idea that somehow, you know, our carbon dioxide is actually causing the Earth to change temperatures.
Ken, what do you think about Jordan Cunningham's vote?
I don't know. Will you remind me again?
He voted for cap and trade.
Oh. Well, see, that's the thing, is everyone's, they got to go along with what everybody else is saying, because otherwise they're going to be labeled, you know, you're a climate denier, you're this, you're that. And it's just kind of like an intellectual bullying that we're getting from the left. It's like, if you don't agree with this, it's because you're a bad person. And once they get up in there to Washington or Sacramento, they're so surrounded by this mentality that they start to just, they have to go along to get along, you know?
I'm glad you called, Ken. Thank you very much. 543-8830. 1-800-549-5832. Inviting your participation in this conversation with Matt Hoy on the Dave Congleton Show. Here's Ron on KVEC. Hi, Ron.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Ron.
Doing well, Ron.
Hey, my point to this is who doesn't know that there are millennial seasons? We have four seasons a year here. We have millennial seasons that come and go, just like the last person talked about, is that you have times of warming, times of cooling. Who's to determine what the temperature should be, and how would they know that? Now, I would like to refer people to, I don't know if you've heard of Judith Curry. She's a renowned climatologist that finally quit because she had some pertinent questions to ask. There was so much political pressure brought on her. She's not a political person. She's a very unassuming woman. She has a lot of lectures on YouTube to really determine. Her question was, we need to determine, and we do not know, what affects the climate. She's talking about the sun effect. She's talking about the ocean itself and whether all of this process that they're trying to go through with cap and trade will make a difference. So that is my point. I don't think it's going to make a difference. Now, I'll tell you what, I got a business in Paso Robles. It gets awful cold in the wintertime. If I went to the city council and said, you know what, I'd like you guys to do something about this, and can you change the climate? They would say, Ron, are you nuts? And I said, well, no, I just want you to do it in Paso. You're talking about doing it in the whole United States. You tell me I'm nuts if I want to change the climate in Paso. Does that,
Matt, want to come in?
Yeah, Judith Curry basically got run out of the climate science business. She was a professor at Georgia Tech. And she got run out because she said, look, you know, the models aren't showing, the models that predict, you know, this 2 degrees of Celsius of warming by 2100, they're not good. They're not, you can't reproduce it. We've been, you know, had 20 or 30 years of these models, and all of them overestimate what we found, you know, over that time. They predicted more warming than actually occurred.
Ron, what else from you?
Well, and anything that we try to do is not going to change the climate. It's going to just shift all this economy in a different way, which will shift it to different people.
So should we do nothing, Ron?
You know what? We should do nothing because we can't do anything that's going to change it. The Paris Climate Agreement was simply a mechanism to move the taxpayer dollars from the United States to China, to India, to prop up their economies. It wasn't going to, and nor is it going to do anything to change the climate. All of this that they're doing in California is for nothing except burden the middle class and also the poor are going to suffer greatly because of this, because people like Judith Curry are not allowed to ask pertinent questions in regard to what is this all about, what can we do, and can we do anything? And the bottom line is, we can't do anything. Actually, if the planet gets warmer, we have more food supply, more people will be fed. You know, as the previous caller...
Explain that. What do you mean, if we get warmer, more people will be fed?
More people, because there's more crops grown.
Well, I gave you the example of Syria, where it got warm and they couldn't grow anymore and they had to leave Syria.
They have to leave Syria for the terrorist issue.
No. I'm going to disagree with you there, Ron. Let's do some basic research. Part of it's terrorism. Part of it is also the drought. There's a major drought in Syria. And anyway, you want to comment?
A couple of things. We had a major drought here in California, and you saw all those people leaving. What you did was water prices went up. You had people drilling more wells, and, you know, the number of people leaving Syria because of the drought, I believe, is very small. But he did make one other point.
You believe?
I believe it's very small.
Okay.
He does make one other point. It is in trying to do this locally. California is doing this cap and trade thing. It's not being done in Arizona. It's not being done in Nevada. It's not being done in Oregon. There's a paper that came out in 2010 after this cap and trade was first published that basically said that all of that kind of extra, you know, savings that they were getting via cap and trade was actually just going right across the border.
All right, Ron, thank you. Mark is on the road on KVEC. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, every day is a holiday. It's great. Hey, you know, thank goodness you have your friend on the radio who has some common sense, which is refreshing, by the way. And, you know, to get back to your point about the drought and how terrible it is in the Middle East, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. You know, last time I checked, I looked at my map, and not only does the Euphrates River run through the entirety of the Syrian country of Syria, it also runs through Iraq, by the way, and you've got a country not too far from there called Israel, and you know what? It didn't rain in Israel for some 1,600 years until earlier in this century did it really start to pick up again. But you know what they've done in Israel? They've created desalinization plants that are basically creating an absolute abundance of foods and vegetables and all sorts of wonderful things.
The drought in Syria is the worst it was in 900 years, Mark.
Okay, whatever.
What do you mean, whatever?
Wait, let me finish.
Whatever.
Dave,
really?
Let me finish, Dave. There are technologies in the Middle East, just like there are here, called desalinization, which the Israelis have done a great job doing because they live in a dry desert climate. And as their population has increased, so has their emphasis on creating desalinization for water. Now, that could be done in a whole host of different ways in the Middle East. However, when you have people chopping people up, cutting their heads off, and basically running around doing God knows what to people, what do you think is going to happen? So using that as an example is a straw man that you were able to knock down.
Starting in 2006, Syria suffered its worst drought in 900 years. It ruined farms, forced as many as 1.5 million rural citizens to crowd into cities alongside Iraqi refugees, and decimated the country's livestock. Water became scarce and food expensive. The suffering and social chaos caused by the drought were important drivers of the initial unrest.
Oh, you know what? You're reading from some document that you believe, which is fine.
And you're giving me your opinion. Okay.
Driven by an outrageous amount of violence and so forth, so that the people there cannot possibly do the right thing and provide for themselves, and using rational thought in order to do that.
Okay, so
the straw men that you're building and knocking down are really irrelevant as far as this argument goes.
So you reject the premise, Mark? I just want to get this straight. You reject the premise that 1.5 million Syrians lost their livelihood because of a drought?
You're suggesting that that's what was completely the reason.
You have
that
no counter. Not, that, you have
I
no
do
counter
not accept
causality.
That simply because I'll, there were
I'll
so many
one,
other
Dave.
Issues
okay.
going along with that.
Go ahead, Mark. Matt, I'm sorry.
According to Smithsonian Magazine, Syria, the devastating drought beginning in 2006 caused many farmers to abandon their fields. Since 1975, Turkey's dam and hydropower construction has cut water flow to Iraq by 80% and to Syria by 40%. Syria and Iraq have accused Turkey of hoarding water.
Right.
That's not climate change. That's Turkey building dams and cutting off water.
Which makes the situation worse, but it doesn't deny the fact that the drought caused the problem, too.
You're saying that, that's all due to the drought is due to climate change. I'm not certain you can link the drought to climate change. I just linked the drought to water policies in Turkey.
No, all that means is that there's less water.
Right.
Okay.
There's more water in Turkey because they're hoarding it.
Exactly. But to finalize my point, this is a political issue. This goes to the politics of that area. And when we talk about climate change in California, it goes to the politics of this state and the irrational behavior of our politicians.
Matt.
I agree.
All right, Mark, thank you. Here's Will on KVEC. Will, how are you, sir?
Evening. First of all, Matt, it's hard to respect someone who suggests that people who support zero population growth ought to commit suicide. And if that was a joke, it's a cruel one, it's uncalled for, and ought to be erased from your performance list.
All right.
But I'd like to have the listeners who aren't sure, you know, a conservative who identifies himself that way comes with a certain worldview, and part of that worldview is that big business is basically good. It will rescue us from whatever problems it causes, and the best we can do is just get out of the way. But I would counter that by saying that I have a choice here. I can either believe Matt, who does a lot of, well, it seems to me, and I still think, and quotes a lot of, you know, the real danger in paid research is researchers who are paid by the fossil fuel industry. So I can believe them, or I can believe 98% of the climate experts around the world who say that man is causing most of this. So that's my choice, Matt, and no offense, but I'm going with the experts, and I'm rejecting people who support big business and excuse everything big business does and tells all of us we should just get out of the way.
Hang on a second, Will. What's wrong with that argument? 98% of the scientists agree with Will.
And, well, usually it's 97%, but, you know, give or take a percent here or there. It's a bogus number. It's a jerry-rigged number.
And there you go.
You know, if you want to,
do the majority of scientists believe in climate change?
Well, it doesn't matter, frankly. I think the majority of scientists, yes, believe in climate change.
All right.
I think everyone should believe in climate change. The question is the climate we have now the perfect climate that we should always have? That shouldn't get colder. It shouldn't get warmer. Are we humans driving it? And then, you know, frankly, I don't believe big business has my best interests at heart. I also don't think the government always has my best interests at heart. And I'm not going to blindly follow the government either, whether it's Donald Trump in the White House or Barack Obama or whoever else.
I said nothing about blindly following government.
You suggested that I was all about big business.
What a second half, Matt. What? They not only say that climate change exists, but that man is causing it. That's the other half.
You know what? A few years ago, I participated in a kind of an online Q&A with, and I don't remember the guy's name. It was probably 7 or 8 years ago, with a climate scientist who was very much believed that humans were the majority driving factor of climate change. And I asked him, the question was, well, let's set aside today's climate change. Let's go back to the medieval warm period. Okay? what caused the warming in the medieval warm period, because no one believes that was humans. We weren't driving SUVs. We weren't, we weren't an industrial society. I said, what caused the medieval warm period? And he was very honest. He said, I don't know what caused that warming, but I know this time it's humans. That to me is kind of a religious belief.
What about that, Will?
Once again, the experts who do the research, peer-reviewed research, it's replicated around the world, are telling me that humans are causing this. And I'm going to go with them, Matt. I'm not going to go with what you just feel in your gut. And to say that it's jerry-rigged, this percentage, that's what conservatives do. Because you don't believe in science. You don't believe in research. You believe that big business, people with money, are going to look out for you, and they're not.
All right. Will, thank you for calling in. And we go to Paul in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Paul. Paul?
Hi.
Hi, Paul. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, have any of you guys been north of San Simeon on Highway 1 lately?
No.
No.
Okay. Do you know that the state is spending tens of millions of dollars to relocate Highway 1 further inland?
Well, they're rebuilding Highway 1 over that big slide. I'm not sure about the rest of the route.
Yeah, no, they're moving it inland, just north of San Simeon, where the sea levels rising are causing us to have to move Highway 1. It's been there for over 80 years in the same place, but now they're moving it inland about a quarter of a mile to higher ground. And how much do you think that costs?
Well, it's going to have to be done anyways. It's going to be a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'd rather spend it on that than the bullet train.
It has to be done because the sea level is rising, and it's encroaching, and it's washing over the highway more and more often. That's why. Hello?
Yeah.
We're here.
Okay. And have you been up in the Rockies lately? Have you been up there?
What's happening in the Rockies, Paul?
In the Rockies, there's millions of acres of pine trees that are dying because of pine beetles. And what used to happen, because I was up there and I saw all these trees, thousands, tens of thousands, as far as you could see, dying. And they were saying that's because the bark beetles and the pine beetles, it used to get cold enough up there that it would kill them during the winter. But now they're surviving during the winter and they just eat the trees. And I wonder how much that costs. You know, the government is relocating Alaskan villages because the sea level is coming up, and they have to move these villages further inland. And, you know, just recently I read, and I'm sure, Matt, because you're well-researched, you know that there was a shelf of ice the size of Delaware that broke off from the Antarctic. You know that, right, Matt?
Yeah.
Yeah, now, all that's happening. I mean, that's real. And 40 years ago, there were scientists that predicted all this was going to happen. And I don't believe that it was just a lucky guess. I believe those people. I don't believe people like you, Matt.
This makes it a free country.
Yeah.
That's what makes it a free country. Thank you, Paul. Before I take the last break, what's the motive of all these scientists in your mind? All the pro concerned scientists about climate change. If you're right and they're wrong, why are they so insistent?
I think it's kind of a desire to control people. You know, we want you to behave in this way, which we see as a beneficial way. We want you to drive less. We want you to fly less. We don't want you to barbecue. We don't want you to do these things.
Stan, I got 45 seconds.
Well, you know, the cap and trade will force companies to use alternative energy sources rather than fossil fuels. And so if they don't want to pay the extra money to use fossil fuels, they'll find alternatives. And that will have benefits, multiple benefits. It will reduce the CO2 amount. It will reduce our dependence on foreign oil.
Let me get a short response from Matt.
Or they'll go across the border to Nevada or Arizona.
I got to go, Stan. Thank you. We'll get final thoughts from Matt Hoy. I'm Dave Congleton, AM 920, FM 96.5, News Talk, KVEC. Matt Hoy, good job. Your website is?
HoyStory.com.
Final thoughts, sir.
Final thoughts. David Ligeti's University of Delaware professor recreated the 97% consensus paper, and he found that contrary to what the climate scientist John Cook had said, only 41 papers out of 11,944 abstracts expressed an opinion on climate change. Only 41 papers said it was global warming.
All right, Matt, thank you. Craig Hill, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Have a good night.